Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Kate.
And Devin.
Welcome to Med Crimes. Happy New Year.
Oh, my freaking word. Do we want to test? Okay. Hi. Welcome back, everyone. We're sorry for the prolonged break.
Yeah, that was sucky.
We've really been trying.
We really have. We got together.
The holidays. My children got sick.
Yep.
You got New Year's.
Yep.
We tried to get together.
Uh-huh.
Computer crashed.
Uh-huh.
Mid-recording.
Purchased new computer. Thank you, Patreons.
Thank you.
What a nightmare it's been. And then there was a sickness in my house.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things, you know, you try. And then sometimes you just get together at 6:31 p.m. on a fucking
Tuesday. On a Tuesday.
In your scrubs after work like a Neanderthal.
Just because we're like, we got to do this.
We got to do this. Our listeners are waiting, dude.
So here we are. We're back.
Couple things.
Oh, my God. There's been so much stuff that's happened.
So R.I.P. Betty White.
R.I.P. Bob Saget.
R.I.P. Bob Saget.
Danny Tanner.
Danny Tanner.
And then something a lot, well, I won't say a lot more serious because Betty White and Bob Saget were serious, but
yeah, but this is ongoing and we don't really know the outcome, and it's very upsetting because it's literally in our own backyard in New England.
So for those of you who are not in New England, not in the United States either, there's a news story going around in our state right now about a missing child. And what's striking about this, other than a missing child, which is striking, is that no one has seen this girl for 2 years.
And it's literally just getting investigated now.
Her name is Harmony Montgomery, and she's from Manchester, New Hampshire.
This little girl, if you see, we can post pictures and we'll post some information.
Yeah,
you look at her picture, and I mean, she is just the most beautiful, gorgeous little angel with this cute little glasses. Sweet. And just if you read about her story, it's like this girl never had a chance. And it comes out when all of a sudden, you know, DCYF can't find her, that no one's actually physically laid eyes on the girl since 2019.
It's insane.
And meanwhile,
she's supposed to be 7 right now.
Yes.
So she's a missing 7-year-old girl.
Yes.
No one has seen her since she was 5.
Right.
They're estimating that she's about 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, who knows? Nobody's seen her. But there's been charges brought up on the dad and her stepmother.
Yes.
None of which are actual, like, there's no kidnapping, there's no murder. Like, none of that, those charges yet. They're kind of, like, outstanding charges.
Right.
One of them's a welfare fraud on the
exactly.
behalf of Harmony.
Because not sketchy at all, the mom, or the stepmom, I'm sorry, not the mom, the, yes, stepmom has been collecting welfare on behalf of this missing child, despite the fact that she's not been physically there since 2019.
Been collecting it and spending that money.
That's nice.
While not taking care of Harmony.
Yep.
So if anyone out there, so there is a current reward for any information that's going to help find her. That's up to $100,000. But even if the reward was only a dollar, I mean, come on.
This doesn't matter.
Forget it.
Yeah.
So the right thing to do is to help find her or give any information if anybody knows anything.
Exactly.
There's a tip line that you can call, 603-203-6060. If you have any information on anything to help find this poor girl.
We're all very upset by this, and we're staying tuned.
And it's in our backyard.
It's literally in our backyard.
We're seeing stories in People Magazine, CBS, CNN rather, CBS, whatever. Yeah. But we're seeing stories everywhere, and this is literally happening an hour away.
Yeah. So we just are like her whole, you know, she is totally in our thoughts. Let's all just help bring this little angel home, no matter how she is or who she's with or what's going on.
Absolutely.
Then we're all just holding out hope.
We're thinking of her.
Yep.
I hope she's safe.
Oh God, me too. I think we're all really hoping this little girl. Will post about her as well and some links to some of her articles. So on another note, we have a Patreon shout out.
Yay! Woo!
Sharon Clark from Australia.
Sharon, we love
you. You are awesome. And
Sharon,
I think
you, I just interrupted you.
It's you do that all the time. I think we all know this.
You are our first Patreon that's not from friends or family, word of mouth.
I know. Like, you're like our first official
fan. Patreon official. I'm sorry you had to wait so long for your shout out that it's taken weeks for us to get there, but we're here. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to us. And we just really love the support. Thank you so much.
You're literally the best. Thank you so much. You're all the best. We love all of our Patreons, honestly. We couldn't do any of this without you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. All four of you. Thank you, Devin.
You're welcome.
We love you guys.
These are the early days.
These are the good old days.
Soon we'll be like listing off a dozen Patreons.
Oh, hell yeah.
Time, right?
Yep, exactly. That's what we're hoping for.
But we have to say these things so that people are like, oh my God, remember when?
Yeah.
Remember when we had Sharon, our first Patreon back in the day? Our first stranger Patreon?
Yeah. She's not a stranger. She's our best friend now.
She's a friend.
She's a friend. Also, if any of you out there are interested in becoming a Patreon, Patreon number 5, that slot's still open. www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
It's a good slot. Get it while it lasts.
5 is a good round number. I'd want to be number 5.
It's not a round number. It's not an even number at all.
I said I know that. I do know that, Devin, but I'm saying it's a good... it's an expression... Never mind.
Moving on.
It's been a long day. Okay, so today's case is really interesting. It's also really, really heavy. Like, really heavy. We're going to be talking about this guy named Josef Mengele, and I apologize in advance because I did find several different pronunciations of his name. I've seen Mengele and Mengele, but I'm going to go with Mengele because that's the one that I've found most often. Now, he was a Nazi physician. He was the most prominent of a group of Nazi physicians who conducted inhumane experiments that often caused harm and death to concentration camp prisoners. So, big trigger warning here.
You read my mind.
Yes, girl. So, big trigger warning here. Holocaust themes. We're going to be talking about children. Like, really creepy, really graphic medical experiments. Like, mass murder. All of it.
I think I'm also going to say that my own personal trigger warning, if you're someone who believes that the Holocaust didn't happen.
Oh, yeah. We don't want you here. You can go away. Sign off. You can find another podcast. We don't want you here.
Bye.
Yeah. That really is very upsetting that there's still people in the world that don't think that happened.
There's still people out there.
I hope you stub your toe every fucking day. You wake up and you stub your toe really, really hard.
And it goes deeper and deeper and deeper into your soul.
Okay, now let's start with Dr. Sorry, Josef Mengele. So he was born March 16th, 1911 in Günzburg, which is a village outside of Ulm in Germany. He was the oldest of three brothers. Now, by all accounts, his childhood was actually normal and happy. They didn't move around a lot. The family was very close.
111 years ago.
It took you a little while to do that equation. And people don't really recall any reports of heavy extremism within his family, at least early on. No anti-Semitism or, you know, social behavioral concerns that might indicate a propensity to harm others.
So they were normal.
They were normal. By all accounts, they were normal. But the culture at this time, which we're going to get into, I think contributed to a lot of his behaviors and ideals later on. So he was the eldest son of Karl Mengele, who was a well-to-do man, and he was in the farming equipment business. And he manufactured farming equipment and actually owned his own manufacturing company. And he was married to a woman named Walburga. Now, his mother, Walburga, was 3 years older than her husband. And
Cougar.
What?
She's a cougar.
Oh, okay. Cougar. I can understand you. Sorry. So, yeah, she was a little older than him. She also came from a well-to-do family, though. So, Mengele described that his father as the more gentle one, and his mom was sort of the disciplinarian in the family. And they had a pretty full household because they had both parents, they had the three kids, and they had sets of grandparents that stayed with them from time to time. So there was always a lot of people around. And the vibe in the house was described as conservative, Catholic, and conventional, but like normal for that time. Okay. So as a boy, he joined the Greater German Youth League. Now, this was a conservative group with multiple different chapters, and they sort of like held meetings and worked on projects. It was sort of like the model of like Boy Scouts. You know, you like get together as like a youth, there's like a youth leader, and then you like work on projects and stuff.
Did they have the fancy vest too?
I don't know. Why don't you Google that?
German?
Okay, Greater German Youth League. Did they have fancy vests?
Working on it.
All right, cool. Devin's Googling. So Mengele recalls that they didn't accept Jews into this group. And they maintained sort of an order of, quote, characteristic qualities of the German people, quote, within the group. And this was sort of his first taste of like the extremist or separatist sort of belief. And at some point in his sort of mid-childhood, his dad did go off to war, leaving his mom to raise the three boys.
Would this be World War One?
Yes.
I was trying to think of the timeline.
And during this time, he did fairly well in school, and he had a lot of friends. He was a bit sickly for a period of time, and he missed a lot of school because he had some chronic kidney ailments. And initially, he was being groomed to sort of assume his father's company as he got older. But he developed this like keen interest in like science and anthropology, and he started really wanting to pursue going to college instead. So his school records indicate that he favored elective courses that were like German National Socialism and other conservative like philosophical sort of ventures. And the thing that he found most exciting was human anthropology, and which is like, you know, the study of like different cultures, different races, and how, you know, things get sort of passed down. And it's all very interesting. And that was the thing that he really, that really motivated him to pursue science as a whole. And he had a specific interest very early on, prior to even starting med school, in human genetics. So
that would be interesting.
Oh, yeah, it
I'll
is.
Give him that.
It gets very complicated. Oh, very complicated.
I mean, you're talking about all these different genomes and right down to the cells.
He began studying philosophy during his undergraduate days in Munich. And there he became fascinated with the works and writings of a man named Alfred Rosenberg. And he was one of the founders and initial ideologists of Nazism. And Alfred wrote books and edited an idealist news publication, and he published a lot of works, which included a 19th century like fabrication, essentially, concerning a supposed Jewish plot of like world domination, and as well as other works that explored all of the ideals of this German racial purity.
I don't like that.
Nobody likes that this day and age. It's really like gross. And he ended up actually working very close with Hitler, and Hitler followed many of his works and ideals.
Ew.
I know. So he then pursued his medical degree at the University of Frankfurt in Germany.
They have hot dogs there.
I mean, I would think so, right? Frankfurt, I think. I could be wrong. Now, there, he studied under a few different professors who were admirers of Hitler, and he started using his research talents to sort of shift towards more of a separatist ideology. And by the time he graduated in 1933, he was an ardent Nazi. And again, the culture around this time, there was a lot of propaganda around this, and there was a lot of propaganda that was anti-Jew and pro-Nazi. So he studied anthropology under a physician named Theodore Mollison, where he conducted studies on blood serum as a means of distinguishing the races, which, like, I don't really understand really the purpose racist. Behind. Oh, I mean, it's all very disgustingly racist, yeah. But I'm not really sure of, you know, what the takeaway from that is supposed to be. But and also just to, like, get a sense of who this guy was and what he was going for. The subject of his dissertation was, quote, racial morphological examination of the anterior section of the lower jaw among four racial groups, end quote. In which
that's very wordy.
It is. In which he linked physical characteristics of each jaw that he studied to the race that that person belonged to. Wow. And he formulated a, quote, racial diagnosis based on, like, changes in the jaw. So this was all, like, super innovative for the time. And, like, I do understand, like, the purpose behind that is an anthropological standpoint. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's research. And maybe we're just kind of like, wow, and sensitive to it because of the timeline that we're in right now.
Exactly. You know? So all just, you know, kind of interesting stuff. He also lobbied in his dissertation for the forceful sterilization of those who demonstrate a genetic probability of passing on a certain genetic defect. And he got high praise for this at the time. Yeah, that's when things get twisted into not so anthropological and more racist and gross.
What kind of genetic defect was he talking about?
Mostly cleft lips and cleft palates.
So if you had the gene to pass on a cleft lip or a cleft palate, he wanted to sterilize you.
Yeah. Yep. Nice, huh?
That's where it starts.
Yes. So now he started using these facial measurements to diagnose Jewish ancestry in people. Diagnose Jewish ancestry. And this.
How?
Because you could, because with any race, there's certain facial characteristics.
Yeah, I know, but
he started applying all those measurements and creating, like, this whole, you know, racist thing about, like, how, oh, well, your nose is like this and your eyes are like this. That means you must have Jewish ancestry. Therefore, you know, fuck you.
I want to know what he says about my nose.
Your nose is beautiful.
It's fucking huge.
It's not huge. I've never thought your nose is big.
Moving on.
Okay. The year is 1933, and this is the year that Hitler is appointed Chancellor of Germany. He was voted in by the Nazi Party, who has grown these past years, and the Nazis assumed power in Germany around this time. Now, at this time, Jews and other races were being murdered by the hundreds of thousands in the street. This is prior to concentration camps even being operational.
So this is prior to the hundreds of thousands that have died then.
Yeah.
These
people are literally by Nazis getting mowed down in the
streets.
Middle of the street. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, this is, you know, the biggest shit stain, as far as I'm concerned, on world history.
For sure.
Honestly.
For sure.
Like, or one of the biggest. I think probably the biggest.
If you're talking about, like, say, in the last 100 years, if you wanted to pick the top 10 for world history.
Oh, this
Holocaust
is probably.
Is surely right up there.
The fact that.
There's no way it can't be.
So many people knew that this was happening.
Yeah.
Knew that this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fucking continued.
Mm-hmm. To build to what it became.
6 million people were murdered.
Could you imagine if...
Horribly.
If there was a little bit more intervening in the beginning.
I
there was no Holocaust then. You know?
Exactly.
Like,
It doesn't matter, like, how, you know, how long ago I learned about this and how much I've learned about it in school. Like, every time I read about it, it just, like, boils my blood that this even happened.
It still makes you angry. And I feel like there's still times where I'm still learning something new.
Oh, yeah. Every time I read about
like
it, I'm
right
like,
now,
you're
this
shitting
is probably
me.
Going to be the first physician story that I hear about.
The stuff that this guy did is absolutely just shocking. It is shocking. It's really just awful.
I hope he died in a concentration camp.
Oh, he didn't. No, I wish to. So at this point, the Holocaust begins, and the concentration camps were put together so that the Nazis had a way of controlling the population of Jews and these other races that they were targeting, the non-Aryan folks, right? And as a way to mass murder people and by more efficient numbers.
It makes it easier to not have to hunt them down.
Exactly.
They're all right in front of you.
Exactly. So anybody who was deemed non-Aryan was imprisoned and either sent to an immediate death or labored and then died eventually. Millions,
and
obviously.
Wasn't it the women and children automatically immediate death?
Basically, some women who were able-bodied and strong were kept alive, and we'll talk about a little bit more about the kids that were kept alive and all of that. So in 1934, Josef Mengele joined the Institute of Hereditary Biology and Racial Hygiene. Yes, the Institute of Hereditary Biology and Racial Hygiene. There was an Institute for Hereditary Biology and Racial Hygiene.
You could go to school for that shit.
Oh, yeah. Now, he was part of their research staff.
I don't think they're open today,
right? No. They're closed. Yeah, no, I should really fucking hope they're long ass closed. So they were part of their research staff. So he was part of the research staff. So by this time, he was very much into anthropology research. Again, doing a lot of, like, you know, facial symmetry stuff, jaw studies. And he was operating on the belief, as many others were during this day, that races other than the Aryan race were of different values and served only to weaken the superior Aryan race. And not only Jews were targeted, but the handicapped, the homosexual, Black, Romani people. And for Nazis, the war offered the possibility of not only removing threats to the German race, but also taking, quote, positive steps to preserve and cultivate the German racial community. So, I mean,
I'm trying to process everything.
It's really, this was literally just like how, you know, people just like felt and thought back then.
And that it was okay.
This was not that long ago, you guys.
No, we're less than 100 years.
Less than 100 years ago,
I mean,
this
we're
happened.
We're talking the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, this was not that long ago. It's very alarming.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
So he spent limited time in pediatrics as well. And he had some experience there at this institute with multiples, like twins, triplets, and genetic medicine. And this, like, fueled his fascination. He did a lot of research in the genetics of these patients and tried to formulate patterns with twins and triplets and how they occurred and their similarities.
That's
and whatnot.
Understandable.
That is what that is understandable. Now, in 1936...
That stuff is still intriguing.
Of course it is. Yeah, and there's been a lot of gains since then, but back then, not a whole lot was known about the genetics there. So, in 1936, Mengele met Irena Schonbein. Now, she was a 19-year-old woman and the daughter of a wealthy businessman in Freiburg, Germany. And they married in 1939. Here is the irony of that situation. So they were very much into like pedigree and purity back then, right? Like your lineage had to be very pure.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't pure. He was associated with the Nazi Party. Yeah. And they, you know, when the Nazi Party sort of blesses or gives permission for one of their people to marry someone, mm-hmm. they do extensive vetting of that person. Oh. They do interviews, they do research into like their lineage and the background and all of that.
Crazy.
So I know, isn't it? Isn't it crazy?
That's so batshit crazy. Now, not just asking your
they
dad
do
for
physical
permission.
No, they do physical exams. They did all of this to try to figure out her racial purity, but they were not able to verify that she was racially pure or like a pure Aryan and shouldn't have any Jewish ancestry whatsoever.
So they couldn't verify it, but they right. could not also prove that she
right,
was.
Right, exactly.
So
they couldn't verify it 100%, but they also couldn't prove that she was. So what they ended up doing was they allowed Yosef to marry her, and they did get married in 1939. But should they have any children, the Nazi Party would not issue them a certificate of racial purity for their children, which was a thing back then.
Stop it.
I swear.
Like you get a birth certificate, but also
and here's also their
like a purebred dog.
It literally like that's AKC like registration. Oh. Isn't that ridiculous? So the irony in that is that he would never have racially pure children as recognized by the Nazi Party.
Wow.
So in 1937,
did
though
they have children?
They did have one son.
Okay.
Yes. So and then just before they got married, in 1937, Mengele officially joins the Nazi Party, right? So in as of 1939, when they got married is when he was a part of the Nazi Party. Mm-hmm. In 1938, he started receiving his military training. And he completed his physician military training when he was stationed in Kassel. Kassel? I think Kassel. And then soon after that, he applied to join the Waffen-SS, which is SS as, I guess, like a special unit of soldiers within the Nazi Party. And he was essentially like a physician soldier within the SS. Mm-hmm. And he was briefly a member of a frontline combat unit. And not a whole lot is known about his time there, but he served as a physician in their frontline combat unit as well. While serving in Germany and Poland, one of his duties was examining these groups of settlers, like giving them a physical exam, determining their lineage via physical exam. And therefore, their appropriateness to settle in a given area.
Almost, again, a different version of other certificates.
Exactly. Like, say, okay, I've diagnosed you with having Jewish ancestry, therefore you cannot settle here. You have to go to the ghetto.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is a whole other side that I never knew.
I'm telling you, this is like sort of...
Like, yeah.
It's like another planet. I can't even like wrap my head around any of this. It's just so upsetting. So, around this time, Auschwitz is built. And that quickly became
that
sort of, I know, it gives me a shudder. Now, that camp.
I had some family members that have gone there, and they said it's like just a place that you never forget.
I actually was talking about this with my husband. It's funny you said that, because he did not go, but he's always wanted to go there because he's a huge, huge history buff. Yeah. And he's always been fascinated with the Holocaust. And he's like, I've always wanted to go.
For some reason, I thought he went. I know he went on a trip.
He said some kids from his class, I guess, went on that trip. And he said, I mean, you go there and it's like everyone's just completely silent. What do you say? You walk through there. Just the energy there must just be so heavy. And I would have no words.
I remember seeing photos. So I have a family member who used to be stationed in Germany when they were in the military.
Right, yeah.
So they were stationed there and had some visitors, and they toured Auschwitz. And it's, from what I can remember them describing, it's like no place that you will ever forget. It's
yeah.
not a place that you go and you're just being all flashy and fooling around.
Right.
It's very somber and solemn.
Very somber. Auschwitz quickly became a symbol of the Holocaust. You hear right. that word, you know, and it kind of sends a shudder, like we were saying.
Hence why we just went on an immediate tangent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, this was the biggest of the death camps, and it was comprised of three main camps. There was Auschwitz I, Auschwitz II, also known as Birkenau, and Auschwitz III, which is also known as Monowitz. Now, once operational, Mengele quickly requested a transfer to Auschwitz. And in April 1943, he was appointed chief physician at Birkenau, that second camp.
Okay.
So he was said to have, quote, thrived and come into his own at the death camps.
He probably felt empowerment.
He did. And his initial duties included assessing new inmates for medical conditions, certifying the quality of meals provided, admitting and discharging inmates from the camp infirmaries, doing autopsies for unclear causes of death.
Admitting and discharging what?
Inmates from the camp infirmaries. Like if there was like someone who was ill, there was like a little infirmary there.
Okay.
Those were sort of some of his initial duties. And it was said that at one point there was an outbreak of typhoid fever among the inmates, and Mengele brutally ended that outbreak. He took all of the symptomatic patients and he ordered them exterminated.
Well, this
was
here I am thinking, oh, good job, dude.
No. This is how he ended that. Instead of treating the people, he killed like a huge shitload of people all at once. And he replaced all the straw mats that they slept on, and he cleaned out their rooms.
Being a physician and saying, "I'm going to treat you."
Yeah, and no other cases were reported after that. Now, he was awarded a war merit for this. For stamping out an outbreak. And he did this a few times. So they praised him for doing this. Like, good job, you ended an outbreak.
The sick people.
Except you murdered all of those
people.
Here's
your medal.
Yeah. So, in addition to his camp duties, he and the other physicians conducted experiments on the prisoners routinely. And this was done on their own at first, unbeknownst to the Nazi party. So these included things like makeshift medication and drug trials, obviously completely unregulated. They would cause hypothermia, like literally fuck around with people, put them in like tubs full of ice water, and then rewarm them just to like assess their response and would happen.
And see who can handle it.
Yeah. I mean, and what they said was that they did this for the purposes of like rescue measures, like figuring out like if they recovered a soldier from the water, you know, what was a good method to rewarm them and preserve their brain function? Mm-hmm. You know, that's what was said to be the reason for that. Now, there was an extensive series of experiments here regarding perfecting a reliable method of mass sterilization. Now, again, remember, he was really focused on like sterilizing certain people, forcibly sterilizing people.
Their
goal was to use a non-surgical method because that would be the most, you know, time-efficient method, right. I guess. And one top contending method was the utilization of x-ray technology to provide a high dose of radiation.
Right.
So using this, he could sterilize up to 1,000 women per day. And to perfect this method, he irradiated thousands of men and women per day, attempting to dial down that radiation dose and figure out what that radiation dose was.
What?
Yep, he did that. Now, routinely, once a camp physician was done with a subject, they would just be executed.
Wouldn't that sterilize them anyway?
Yeah. But they're not actively trying to, they're mostly just doing research here. They're trying to figure out, you know, they're not doing this for the purposes of sterilizing all there. In their mind, all these people are going to die anyway. So they're not trying to actively sterilize them. They're trying to research the best method so they can sterilize everybody else in the world.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
So let's basically, they're lab rats.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what that was. So once they were done with the subject, they would either be executed or they were ordered killed or killed by the physician themselves. Or the physician would perform an autopsy with them still alive.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Like dissect them to death. And often, this is rough, they would remove certain organs and sew people back up just to see what would happen. Often getting them up off the table if they survived the procedure and saying, okay, get back to work. No anesthesia, no pain medication. Devin is shook. She is shook. I was shook reading this. I can't. The next part is really rough, and I'm like bracing myself. Like, I don't even know if I can get through it. It's so upsetting. It's so upsetting.
Wait, the next part?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot more, Devin. There's like so much more. Yes.
Why was he doing?
For research. He wanted to see what would happen when we took certain organs out. Devin, no other physician in the world had access to disposable human beings that were alive before him. So this was, he found this.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
He saw this to be.
I have all these clinical trial people. Exactly. That are involuntary. And
he
said,
this is amazing. I have all of these living human beings at my disposal. I can do whatever the fuck I want with them.
So I'm going to cut them off.
And I'm
going to
be seen as a hero. And I'm going to figure out all of these medical mysteries that we don't know anything about yet.
And it's fine because none of these people are pure.
Exactly.
So I can do what I want to them.
Exactly. So you just hold on to your, buckle in, girlfriend. Oh. So this is rough, you guys. Once 20 Jewish children were selected by Mengele to be sent for tuberculosis research, quote unquote. They were purposefully infected with the disease, according to historical accounts by some survivors. Once the research was completed, they were hanged from heating pipes to eliminate the evidence of the experiments.
Kids?
Children. 20 Jewish children.
Oh, my God.
Any outbreak of any disease was treated with immediate extermination. There was an outbreak among children at one point with necrotic stomatitis, which is like that crusty, like back black, like sort of like necrosis that can occur around the mouth. It's treatable. It's typically a bacterial infection. And there was an outbreak among children at the camp. And these children were isolated from the rest and then exterminated. Hundreds of children. I'm telling you, this is upsetting.
Oh my God.
You ready for more?
No.
I know.
Oh my God.
It's really heavy and it's really hard to wrap your head around. I know. I get it.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's so upsetting.
Because again, this is the nature of our podcast is I really have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, I think next time give me a heads up.
Okay.
No, no.
Okay. So there were also. I know. Okay. Don't be angry. All right. Calm down. We got more. We're going to get through this.
Okay.
So there were experiments also using electroconvulsive therapy. These were conducted on inmates as well. Now, this is actually a well-known treatment, which is still utilized today
ECT.
For the treatment of, exactly, ECT.
Mental health, depression.
Exactly. Yeah. Psychiatric disorders. And it's actually been shown to work. And nobody really knows why it works, but it does work in some situations.
Sometimes.
Now, a lot of people not suffering from any of these diseases were subjected to ECT without their consent at very high doses for prolonged periods, essentially
again to just see what happens.
Torture, getting electrocuted. Literal torture. Yeah.
To just see what happens.
To see what happens. Now, there have been Holocaust survivors who recall Mengele personally and speak to his chilling and unabashed disregard for human life. And the fear that his presence incited among the prisoners. And it became known in the camps that if somebody was being summoned to be seen by Dr. Mengele, that they knew that they may not return at all or be subjected to experiments.
Dr. Death, right?
Dr. Death, yes. And he was described as seeing certain humans as a problem and certain races as no more than insects that must be exterminated so as to not contaminate the stark and beautiful German Aryan race. So he now began involving himself in the selection process. Now,
great.
The selection process is when prisoners initially arrive at the camp to scout for subjects, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty chilling process. Essentially, a prisoner is unloaded from the cart or wherever they arrive from. And, you know, somebody sort of looks at them and screens mm-hmm. them. And says and points in one direction
left
if you're going
right.
to the labor camp mm-hmm. and in the other direction if you're going to the gas chamber. So it's very chilling. Now, most physicians didn't want to be a part of this. So they saw it as sort of like playing God. But for whatever reason, Mengele loved it. And he had just a striking, genuine emotional detachment from all of this. And
I'm not surprised.
Very, very scary stuff. Now, at this point, the Nazi Party
probably just looked at them and been like, yeah. "Who do I want to play with today?"
Yeah. Now, at this point, they had enough information to sort of present to the Nazi Party all of this stuff that they were finding out, and officially, a grant was provided from the German Research Foundation for him to continue his efforts, and he formed a research institute at Auschwitz, staffed by physicians as well as some inmates doing clerical work. And some camp and prison physicians and healthcare workers were often forced to assist. Now, he had involved himself in this selection process, that chilling, you know, selection process. And they had gotten this grant. Now, it was at Auschwitz that Mengele developed a deep interest in twins. So once again,
right.
he's into the Coming twin back. Research and the science behind the development of twins and other multiples. And a lot of why he wanted to be at the selection process was to pick out those sets of twins
and keep them.
And many sets would come through the concentration camps. And the fascination came with the thought that if I can harness the mechanism behind the formulation of twins, could we use it to multiply the members of the Aryan race and to grow at a more sufficient, like a more efficient rate?
How can I use the genetics of a twin
to literally increase the German birth rate?
To grow more people that I like.
Yeah. To increase the German birth rate. That's what he wanted to figure out how to do.
But in the way that the birth rate of those that he approved of.
Yeah.
Not just any old birth rate.
Of the German master race. Yep. So he would study twins and he would record the differences, you know, however minute, you know, oh, this one does have like a slightly different eye color or whatnot. And he would, you know, record all of that very diligently. Now, adult and child sets of twins were subjected to various experiments and to data collection. And Mengele often directed the removal of certain organs for histological examination, which mostly resulted in death. If one twin died of a disease, he would kill the other to have an accurate comparative post-mortem exam.
Oh, come on.
And he personally was said to have killed 14 sets of twins by injecting chloroform into their hearts. And once he suspected a set of twins of having tuberculosis, so he ordered them killed and dissected them himself, and he was wrong.
Oh.
And I have a thing about eyes, so this is rough for me. Anybody with things about eyes, sharp things and eyes. Many eye studies were conducted, and there was a fascination with blue eyes, you know, as being part of the Aryan race, the master race. Now, blue eyes were associated with, like, the superior race, and eyes were routinely harvested from inmates for chemical testing. And that would often render people blind or at times lead to complications, which would include death, infection.
I was going to say, if they're blind, can't work, whatever, here you go.
Exactly. And he was witnessed injecting the eyes of Jewish children and adults with chemicals and medications like adrenaline and chloroform in an effort to change their eye color to blue.
Oh, come.
I'm telling you, this is, so it just gets worse and worse.
If we were there.
Oh, yeah, we would. We are not the master race, you and I. We have beautiful shit brown eyes, me and Devin. The subjects he retained were often better fed and better cared for than the laboring inmates. Like, the twins that he kept around for several weeks would get, like, better food and, you know, get taken care of, better sleeping quarters.
Weeks.
Yeah.
Several
and then
weeks.
Eventually
That's
they
it.
Would get killed,
That's
of
it.
Course.
You get a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. So he also was said to have sought out pregnant women that would arrive at the camps. And would, of course, do terrible, terrible things to them as well. Yes. So, trigger warning here.
I'm triggered.
Yeah, I know, me too. And he would perform experiments, including, like, removing the babies from the moms, removing the fetuses without anesthesia, extracting the fetuses, and then sending the mom to the gas chamber if she survived. And, again, he would routinely just, like, remove random organs from people just to see what happens and then order them right back to work. No pain medicine, no anesthesia whatsoever. This is another rough one. Can I keep going? Because this is a lot. Mm-hmm. This is a lot. He was witnessed sewing two Romani children, child twins together back to back in an effort to create a set of conjoined twins. And they, a few days later, they died of gangrene after many days of suffering.
Oh.
This is really rough.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now, this continued for about 4 years. Literal daily, utter torture and murder of thousands of people. And it was, and he was witnessed
outside of the, that's outside of the hundreds of thousands that just, that are just to like the gas being chambers, gassed. Here you go, die, yeah. Or those mm-hmm. that died of other yes. complications or natural things that happened in the
yeah,
in
this
the labor
is
camps.
Completely separate.
These
yeah.
are just the thousands that died from him after he toyed with them.
Yeah. Yep. So it was said that he was witnessed being kind to children, and then it was like a switch flipped, and like, he would, like, bring some sugar cubes for some kids and, like, socialize with them. And it was like, okay, kill them. And then he would order them executed and they would just, like, be murdered right in front of him. And he would just show them. Like, he was just absolutely a monster. A
and
fucking
he's a father.
Monster. Yeah.
Like, okay, so did he just go home to his wife and son at the end of the day?
I mean, I guess.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah. So,
his own son, which, by the way, he couldn't get a certificate for.
Because we couldn't confirm his racial purity.
So,
yeah.
What did he do with his son? Here you go.
Yeah. So, now, around this time, the collapse of the Third Reich occurred.
Yeah.
And he and other high-ranking officials became marked men immediately. Uh-huh. And in January 1945, the Red Army camp, the Red Army liberated the camps, and he was transferred to Gross Rosen concentration camp, which was a neighboring camp. And much of his camp medical records were destroyed by the SS when the camp was liberated. And he did take with him a few boxes of his research and documents and some specimens. But the Red Army then closed in on him there at Gross Rosen. And so he and his unit fled from there, too. And this was in February of 1945. His unit then headed west to avoid capture. However, in June of 1945, he and his unit were taken prisoners of war.
Good.
But he was soon released for a couple different reasons. So, number one, when he was initiated into the SS, most people from the SS will get a tattoo, which is like the SS tattoo when you enlist in the SS. Uh-huh. And he refused to get the tattoo at the time. I don't know why he refused, but that aided in his release. So when he said, no, look, I don't even have a tattoo. I'm not part of the SS. Oh. And the situation was so fluid and things were happening so fast. It was so disorganized that they were like, okay, right. They couldn't prove that he was who he was. So he and his unit were actually released at that point. And they couldn't confirm his identity. So he then obtained papers under an assumed name of Fritz Holman, and he evaded capture for years. And he started working in and around Germany as a farmhand. He did this for years. And in July 1949, he fled to Argentina. And at that point, his wife abandoned him, and they divorced formally in 1954.
Oh, okay, so the wife and child were with him as they were fleeing from
yeah.
all this
they
stuff?
They saw each other in secret,
okay.
I guess. They were seeing each other in secret, and then eventually they parted ways in 1954. So he did find work as a carpenter in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Now, he initially lived in a boarding house, which was run by a Nazi sympathizer, and it housed many Nazi war criminals during its time. And soon after, he traveled to other countries. You know, he would stay with, you know, other Nazi sympathizers. There was actually a lot at this time because the Nazi party was sort of collapsing. That whole Third Reich was collapsing, mm-hmm. but people still had these ideals, mm-hmm. you know. So there was a lot of options for him, unfortunately. He actually assumed some sales work for his father's old farm equipment company, weirdly mm-hmm. enough, which was nice for him because he got to travel all over. So he was never in the same place twice. I'm getting a runny nose from being down here. It's so cold. My basement is so cold. It's 4 degrees outside right now.
Oh, yeah, it is. Gross. It's probably
it's
five
really bad. I'm so sorry. It might be 5 in here. It could be 12. I don't know what it is.
You had frozen pipes before we started.
I did,
this.
Yes. My husband burned his arm.
We are. The lack of plumbing and frozen pipes couldn't stop us.
I know. It's really just ridiculous. So at this time, while he was in Argentina and like floating around and working, he was believed to have already been dead. And because nobody could find him in Europe, he was sort of just gone. His wife had lost track of him. And so many people had died in like this disorganized effort to, you know, liberate these camps. They just assumed that he was dead. Now, let's see. His name was mentioned multiple times in the Nuremberg trials in the mid-1940s after the fall of the Nazi reign, but years later he was able to obtain a passport using his real name because years after everyone thought he was dead, and you know, he was just like able to be like, oh well, I can be me again. And now this was kind of a stupid move though, because in 1959 a public records search identified his passport as well as his divorce papers from 1954, so that like set off alarms that, oh holy shit, this guy really is still alive. And they put it all together. Now, so he did remarry in 1958. Get this, his ex-sister-in-law.
Stop.
His brother's ex-wife. He married Stop. Her. I know, isn't that gross? It's just kind of gross. His Israeli intelligence agency named Mossad hoped to capture Mengele so that he could be brought to trial in Israel, but their investigation failed to generate any leads. And West Germany also then issued a reward for his capture. There were just like multiple entities from multiple countries all looking for him once they figured out that he was still alive. A multinational manhunt ensued. Yes, exactly. Now, in 1960, a Nazi sympathizer assisted him in relocating once more, this time to Brazil. West German authorities were tipped off at some point.
Nazi,
oh, it is.
Sympathizer.
Yeah, I know. Now, West German authorities were tipped off at some point to his presence there and did attempt to extradite him, but were not able to locate him. And he evaded capture for years due to this like network of Nazi sympathizers that aided and abetted him. And he just was able to travel all over Brazil and Argentina. In the late 60s to 70s, he lived in a farmhouse with friends of his. However, their friendship kind of deteriorated because this guy's a fucking monster. Mm-hmm. And that's when he moved out and he rented a bungalow and under an assumed name. He finally smartened up and was like, I better not use my real name anymore.
You think?
And he hid out in his bungalow for a few more years. Now, his health in 1972 begins to deteriorate a little bit. And in 1976, he actually suffered a stroke. And then in February 7th of 1979, Mengele suffered another stroke while swimming in a swimming pool and subsequently drowned.
I was just going to ask you if he drowned.
He did drown. Cool. So he was buried under the assumed name of Wolfgang Gerhard. Now, at this point, he had never been found by the authorities, right?
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, sightings of Mengele.
Drowning is not justified for him. He needed worse.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I don't want to disappoint you, but like, he did not die in like a. I mean, he was fucking swimming, enjoying himself.
Been executed.
Tortured first, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
1,000%. Mm-hmm. So, now sightings of Mengele are being reported all over, and West German intelligence received information that this Gerhard guy who drowned in a swimming pool in 1979 might have been Mengele. And they raided the house that belonged to a lifelong friend of his. This guy's name was Hans Sedlmeier. Sorry about that. Sedlmeier, I think. And they found a couple of things, including an address book written in code with Mengele's like multiple identities and addresses over the years. It was all like in code. It was all like very sketch. And they interrogated this guy, and the guy finally broke down and he said, yes, this was Mengele, and I will show you where he's buried. And they did show him where he was buried. The body was exhumed in June of 1985.
There's no rest in peace for him.
No. And extensive forensic examination confirmed that this was indeed the body of Josef Mengele. Now, this was further confirmed with DNA once that was available in 1992. And unfortunately, the monster, never faced any legal recourse for any of his actions.
Because he's a coward.
He is widely regarded as one of the most vicious war criminals of all time.
Yeah.
With good reason.
He couldn't do due diligence.
No.
And bring him to justice.
Yeah, exactly. Now, after the fall of the Nazi Party, war criminals were tried for all of their crimes and for the murder of... And many of them would say things like, oh, I was just following orders. You know, you've seen like videos and heard mm-hmm. accounts mm-hmm. of that. And mm-hmm. I mean, sure you were, but like you fucking murdered people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you're.
And Mengele was making the orders.
And he was making like, the orders was... and doing mm-hmm. it himself and doing things that were like worse sometimes, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure.
Now, ironically, his skull to this day resides at a university in Buenos Aires of really? A university of anthropology.
They study that.
So
jaw.
People are studying his jaw and his good. Skull. So that is the really insane
suggestion, Brad.
And upsetting story of Josef Mengele, the psychotic Nazi German physician who tortured and murdered millions of people, and it's very upsetting, and now we're all very bummed out
with them.
And I did read an incredible book about this guy. The book was called Mengele Unmasking the Angel of Death, and it was written by David G. Marwell, and that's where I got a lot of my information. And he actually interviewed a lot of the Holocaust survivors and the families of the survivors. And he tells lots of like crazy and really specific stories and things that they sort of witnessed firsthand.
There's
from
not
Mengele.
Many of them left.
So I will link that in the show notes. Yeah, exactly. There's not many of him left. So this is many of them left. So this
no,
is, you know,
there can't be many of them
all
left,
really important story to tell. And
the
this
ones
was...
that are left were young children. So
I know.
Could you imagine
yes.
having those stories with you for your entire
I can't,
life?
I can't imagine. I mean, that is just... incredible.
Thanks, Kate.
So sorry to upset you. I know.
The end of another podcast where I feel like, oh,
like
man.
A damn dude.
Good story.
I know it was. It was a really, really crazy story. But if you guys want to send us a like on Instagram, you can find us at MedCrimes Podcast. You can send us a Twitter at MedCrimes PC. You can Facebook us by searching Med Crimes Podcast, or if you wish to become a Patreon, www.patreon.com//// Med Crimes Podcast. Sorry, we're really cold in my basement.
So our tongue's frozen. It's
really bad. My nose is running. I'm like literally trembling. This is what we do for love.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Yes, thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.